Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make the Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. John Canzano.
John Canzano.
People don't like to hear the truth all the time. You know, people ask you questions, but they don't actually necessarily want to hear the answers.
Love it.
I mean, I like the guy. I listen to him every day.
Canzano, what's going on, man?
He's dead sexy.
I think he does a damn good job.
I'm going to be rooting for this young Portland team, which, you know, is a terrific team. You guys just have a terrific nucleus.
You pay attention to detail. That's why you're so successful.
I just think he's honest. Straightforward and to the point.
You're bringing up something that's probably the average sports fan watching the game didn't pick up on.
I'm really glad to see that someone who speaks their mind is not afraid to tell it how it is.
He's a smart guy. That's my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Hate him.
You don't want to get nobody a second chance.
Trump. To represent that as some sort of subterfuge by John Canzano, I would have expected far better.
He just sounds like an egotistical idiot.
He was rude, crude, and wrong.
Love to hate
him. Yo, John, I can't stand you. I can't stand you, but I come back every day to listen to the show.
Bald faith truth teller.
Who is he to judge?
Well, he can raise your eyebrows a lot.
I was angry. He just got my feathers that day big time.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth. Welcome to a special edition of the Best of the Bald-Faced Truth radio show.
Well, we couldn't have a post-game show if we tried. Look at that madhouse out there. Lucas and Walden trying to fight through the traffic and go into the locker room. The Portland Trailblazers, at about 2 minutes and 18 seconds past the hour of 2 o'clock, the world championship. They are number one. 109 to 107 is the final score, and it's all over.
That iconic call from June 5th, 1977, Bill Shonley on the mic, leads us into our first interview on a Best of the Bald-Faced Truth radio show. Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening. Here's an interview I did with Dr. Jack Ramsey in 2013. Listen to this. Dr. Jack, may he rest in peace, gave us some of his time and shared some of his wisdom. Dr. Jack Ramsey, you know him. I'll never get tired of writing about, talking about, or hearing people talk about Dr. Jack Ramsey. Welcome to the program.
My pleasure, John.
Hey, I got to ask you here. I was doing a little bit of research on the Blazers, and I was 6 years old, by the way, in 1976 when you got here, but I'm not trying to make you feel old, but I'm just saying I have to read up on this stuff. I've seen that photograph of that championship parade in 77 up Broadway. What was it like to ride in that parade?
Oh, it was a marvelous experience. I have a picture that was taken of that parade and the car in which I was riding with my wife Jean and daughter Carolyn, and the fans wall to wall on Broadway. It was a most memorable event for all of us who participated in it, and I think the fans who attended that as well.
When you look back at that 77 team, now when you got here in 76, the Blazers hadn't made the playoffs, they hadn't had a winning record in their six-year history, and everything sort of just happened. Were you surprised it happened so fast?
I was not surprised after what I saw at training camp. I thought, and Jack McKinney at that time was my assistant, and after about 3 or 4 days, I said to him, Jack, this team can be really good, and we could contend. And he said, yeah, I think we have a chance to make the playoffs. Now, I said, no, I think we have a chance to win the whole thing. And I told the players as much during one of the last scrimmages that we had in training camp. And they were, I think they felt it. Because when you have a good team where everybody is playing together and playing effectively, there is a sense that runs among the players that they know they can be good. Now, we had to prove that, and we struggled at various points early. beat anybody.
We're talking to Dr. Jack Ramsey, Basketball Hall of Fame coach, also one of the 10 greatest coaches of all time, named that in 1996. Okay, so you win the championship in 77. The second season, you start off 50-10 after 60 games. What was that like?
That was the most fun I've ever had in my life, because we just went around the league, and it didn't matter whether we were playing home or away. Again, we just felt we could beat everybody, and we were pretty much doing it. And unfortunately, we ran into a rash of injuries that decimated that team. But for that first 60 games, that was so much fun. Everybody enjoyed it, and still, when I get together with those players, either individually or collectively, they still talk about that and how enjoyable that was.
When you're winning like that, I mean, how much coaching are you doing at that point? Or was this thing, did you sort of get it going and then it's just so contagious and the chemistry's so good and the guys know what you want out of them that you start doing less coaching, more coaching? What's that like?
Well, it's a different kind of coaching. You still need to hone in on all the things that are necessary for you to play that way, and you conduct your practices in that atmosphere. You certainly don't want complacency to sit in, and but it's you see everything happening, and it's like kind of like a dream of all the good things that you ever thought about you. But what you might accomplish in basketball, they're all coming true right before your eyes.
We're talking to Dr. Jack Ramsey here on the Bald-Faced Truth on 95.5 The Game. You continued to coach the Blazers until 86. You had great success as a coach. Your record, when you retired, you were second all-time among wins, trailing only Red Auerbach. Did it frustrate you at all that in that 10-year period that you couldn't get back on top?
Yeah, it did. We had some tough breaks, and you can't look back, of course, but you know, losing Bill Walton as we did, and then we drafted Sam Bowie and he had a series of injuries. You know, we just couldn't get everybody together to repeat. And that was you know, when you win one and you have the talent that we did, you want to keep winning. And I think, barring injuries, that team would have won a number of championships. It was that good. And the league knew it. The other teams knew it. The other coaches knew it. But, you know, you can't look back and begrudge what happened. Another factor in that scenario, we had Moses Malone at one point. And had we kept Moses, we would have withstood the loss of Walton much, much better. And I think we might have been able to continue winning championships.
Talking to Dr. Jack Ramsey, you brought up Sam Bowie. I have to ask you, at what point do you realize, we should have taken Michael Jordan?
Probably by the end of that season, when I saw how great a player Michael was going to become. He got off to a great start in the league, and competing against him a couple of times as we did, I saw the potential there that, you know, if you have a chance to get maybe the greatest player ever to play the game, that's the consensus of opinion, you better take that and then make whatever other adjustments. We needed a center. But it's possible we could have packaged a couple of players to get a good enough center to still be a contending team to win it all.
A lot has been made. I call you Dr. Jack. Everybody calls you doctor. You have a master's degree and a doctorate in education. You've got a Bachelor of Science degree in social science from St. Joe's. How much did your education in a classroom translate into coaching?
Well, coach, there's a lot of teaching that goes into coaching. I think the general impression is that coaches are kind of guys that keep everybody together in the locker room and maybe draw up a play now and then. But good coaches are good teachers, and I tried to be a good coach and a good teacher. I think you find that among the very good coaches, they all teach the game that they want to play and teach it very well. So I think there is a high correlation with the quality of a coach and his ability to teach.
Talking to Dr. Jack Ramsey here on the Bald Faced Truth. Okay, now, 1992, you join ESPN as an analyst and a host, and you're still doing that. At what point in your career as a coach did you realize that television and radio was a possibility for you?
While I was still in Portland, at the end of one season, we were eliminated, and the Seattle television station, is it K? What's the flagship station? Anyway, they called me during the playoffs and asked me if I would do analysis for television of their games. And I was really not tied into anything special at the time. And you could do it at the end of the day, fly up, do the game, fly home. So I wasn't missing out on a lot of time. And I did that, and I enjoyed it very much. So that got me interested, and then a fellow that I knew who wrote for the Philadelphia Bulletin, a fellow named Jim Barniak, he was doing the NBA schedule for the Sixers on cable TV in Philadelphia, and he said, when you're finished coaching, give me a call, because if you're interested, I think we could do television together. So when I did finish, I called him, and that was my first job, to do Sixers games on cable television, and I think that was probably 1988 or 89.
Dr. Jack Ramsey is our guest here on the Bald Faced Truth. A lot has been made about you, your health. You're swimming. Are you still doing push-ups and sit-ups?
Oh, yes.
How many are you doing a day?
Well, yesterday I did 50 push-ups in the morning and 60 in the afternoon. I did 125 crunches in the morning and 100 in the afternoon. And this morning I swam about a half a mile. So, and ran about a half a mile. I've had a lot of surgery, and in my left leg in particular, so I don't run long distances like I used to do, but I try to, my theory on staying fit is exercise your arms and legs as much as you can. So the swimming does my upper body, and the running, what I can do, does my legs. So I try to stay fit.
You've been battling melanoma since 2004. And how's your health now?
My health is amazingly good.
Great.
My last three scans, revealed no cancer in my body anywhere,
that's great.
Well, it's not great. It's a miracle.
Dr. Jack Ramsey.
But I'll take it.
The NBA playoffs. Now, we've been talking a lot about LeBron James and his mother today on the show, and we're talking about that series. Anything really surprise you? Chris Paul, the Spurs looking old during the first two games of the series and suddenly looking formidable again. As an analyst, as you look across these playoffs, what are you most surprised by?
I'm mostly surprised by the Jekyll and Hyde appearance of the Boston Celtics, where on their home floor they average 75 points a game allowed, and on the road, they average 102 points allowed. Now, that to me is just mind-boggling. This is the best defensive team in the league. They led the league in field goal percentage allowed, three-point percentage allowed. They were second in points allowed, and they played the kind of defense that you need to be the top team in the league. They had a great road record in the regular season, the best in the league. So why are they winless in five games on the road in the playoffs against teams? Atlanta was under 500. And yet Atlanta beat them three times on their own court. And Cleveland has beaten them twice. in Cleveland and the Celts blow teams out on their home floor. I don't understand that at all. That's very surprising to me.
You think it's officiating, or is it playoff atmosphere?
No, officiating had nothing to do with it.
Okay. You think playoff atmosphere, or the Celtics just struggling? Maybe, you know, you've seen teams that win a lot early, and then late in the season, things sort of be off, sort of feel off kilter a little bit?
I can't really. I've thought about this for days. I can't find a reason. They're a different-looking team on the road than they are at home. Now, every team plays better at home. Yeah, that's a given. But you don't see this disparity on the best team in the league.
Yeah, they don't look like a championship team right now,
no,
especially
they don't.
Playing on the road. Who's in your NBA Finals matchup, if I have to put you on the spot right now?
Oh, I would say the Lakers and the Celtics. I think the Celtics, they have home court advantage throughout, so they really don't have to win on the road. But, you know, you'd better win on the road because some team is going to beat you at home.
And who do you take as your champion?
I would say the Lakers.
Just playing too well right now.
They're playing very, very well.
All right.
I wouldn't rule out San Antonio. You know what you said earlier? The old guys look like they couldn't get out of their own way in those first two games at New Orleans, and then they come home and look like champions on their home court. And the matchup between Chris Paul and Tony Parker is one for the ages.
Phenomenal. Hey, Dr.
Matt, before we finish,
yeah.
How did Senator Obama do yesterday?
You know, almost as well as you. He was good. He was good. He talked about his daughters, and he talked some sports with us. And you can listen to that on 955thegame.com if you get on the Internet.
Okay, I'll do that.
All right. Hey,
I think, you know, we haven't had a president yet with a left-hand jump shot.
And you're looking for one.
I'm looking for one.
So we know where you're voting. Hey, you just keep doing those sit-ups and push-ups.
I'll try.
Okay, Dr. Jack, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, John.
Want more of the best of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show? Leave it right here. More with John Canzano.
Late to inbound. The Blazers have a 20-second timeout. Nate McMillan deciding whether to use it. Blake now throws to Roy. Brandon, a three-pointer out front. Hit him! Yes, he did! Oh, yeah!
Wow! Are you kidding me?
The natural buries a 30-footer at the buzzer. And the Blazers run off the court. A winner by two.
You're listening to the best of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show.
Love that highlight. You may remember it. I remember it. Brandon Roy, tough to forget. Also, one of my favorite interviews that we've ever done on this radio show came with Brandon Roy. It was shortly after he signed his max deal with the Blazers. It would become a contract that a lot of Blazer fans would slap their foreheads and wonder what were the Blazers thinking as Brandon Roy's knees did not hold up. But we caught up with Brandon Roy on the day of his news conference. He had packed up, he had done the news conference to announce that max deal, and he was in the car driving towards Seattle with his kids in the car. It was one of my favorite interviews that we've ever done on this show, and I bring it to you here as part of the Best of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. Enjoy.
And Alvin Gentry, with his hands folded, is going to get an earful now. Let's listen to the reception for Brandon Roy. To call it thunderous would be probably doing it a disservice.
Brandon, where are you right now?
I'm actually on I-5 driving to Seattle.
What's the traffic like?
It's terrible right now, man. It made a three-hour drive a 4 to 5 hour drive.
Man, you can't leave at this time. You have to know that, being a Seattle kid.
Yeah. No, I know that. I actually had the press conference, and then I had to pack up some of the kids' stuff, so I never leave at this time of day, but I did today, so it caught me.
You know, you got the max deal. You know, I'm on record. I thought you deserved it. Everything you gave the organization, everything that you promised to deliver one day here. Can you take us through what it's like to be a player involved in a big negotiation like that?
Well, you know, honestly, this is the first time I've ever been a part of anything like this. You know, I've had friends in NBA who's gone through contract negotiations, but none of them were involved in a max deal, and it is a complicated situation. I think you know, for me, I had a chance to sit down and talk to Coach Romar and, you know, my college coach, and he told me just to relax and the situation will take care of itself. You know, there was a moment there I felt the pressure of wanting to be signed, you know, right away. And I may have got a little frustrated, a little disappointed, but I think when he called me and helped me relax and told me that, hey, look, a lot of guys go through this. You just have to be patient and just trust that things will work itself out. You know, that helped me out a lot. But there's a lot of back and forth. But, you know, I try to do my best to enjoy my summer and let my agent do most of the work with the Blazers.
How does that work? Does the agent call you and say, okay, now they're offering this and I think we should do this? Are you, like, day-to-day involved, or was it like you were getting a call once a week? Or how involved is that?
Well, there was a moment there where I wasn't involved day-to-day, and it was more early July. And then, you know, summer went through a period where I think both sides took a step back. And I told my agent, hey, look, you know, just call me when you feel like we're close again. So that way I just wasn't spending every day worrying about the contract, thinking about the contract. I just wanted to get away and say, hey, look, I'm going to enjoy my family. And call me when both sides are moving closer towards an agreement. And I think, you know, towards the end of the month, you know, both sides got reengaged in it again. And he started to begin to call me again and say, look, you know, we're moving closer. We're getting closer. And you can start to relax a little bit. So that's kind of how my process went, you know, but I'm sure everybody's different.
I've got brothers and sisters. They get a big pay raise. I always say, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to save the money. You're going to buy some. What are you going to go out and buy that you don't already have?
That's a good question. You know, I haven't had any plans on what to buy. I definitely want to buy a home in Portland. You know, I'm going to be there for 5 years and then including, you know, my last year on this deal. So I want to buy a home in Portland. But, you know, the biggest thing was, you know, my rookie year, I had, you know, a lot of people tell me, hey, save that money so that way you won't be, you know, in need of a second contract. So, you know, that way I was really relaxed this summer because I did do a good job of saving a lot of my money and I didn't feel like I had to have another contract. So I don't know. I'm just going to enjoy it, you know, put a lot away for my kids, but not too much so they can work for their own.
You know, Warren Buffett says the same thing. He wants to give his kids enough money so they could do anything, but not so much that they don't do nothing, you know?
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Find out where that line is and let us all know. But when it comes to the Blazers, you know, people are looking at 5 years and they're going, gosh, the way Brandon plays, he plays so hard. He's in the key, gets to the basket. They saw you on the floor all year, not getting a lot of calls as well from the officials. But will you change the way you play at all, or are you just going to keep being Brandon Roy?
No, I'm going to keep being Brandon Roy. I think I'm going to improve. I know a lot of things I want to work on this off season is continue to make my mid-range game much better so I don't have to take as many bumps when I get to the basket. But, you know, my thing is never to play for money or to try to, you know, not go out there and get injured. I just try to play as hard as I can to win every game. And I think the longer I've been in this league, I've learned how to take care of my body a little bit more. I know something, you know, I'm going to do this year is I'm going to hire a personal chef to make sure I'm eating properly throughout the season. And then maybe even get involved in some yoga or some Pilates just to continue to try to give myself some type of edge to go out there and to continue to improve. But, you know, I looked at my first season and I played about 50 or so games. And then, you know, my second season moved to 74. And then last year I was at 78. So, you know, I continue to play more and more games each year, but I think that's just with learning the NBA game, learning to travel and understanding, you know, when you're hurt and when you're injured. So hopefully next year I'll be at 82.
Brandon Roy is our guest here on the Bald Faced Truth. We're talking with him. He just announced, went public, news conference, $80 million contract, more or less, give or take, 5 years. If I would have walked up to you while you were working on the docks after high school and I would have said, hey, you're going to sign an $80 million contract one day, what would you have thought?
You know, I would have thought you were crazy. You know, if you'd have told me I had a chance to still make it to the NBA, I'd have been happy. But, you know, I couldn't dream of this day. You know, I mean, when I was a kid, I used to dream that, you know, I was going to go to the NBA, you know, I was going to have a great career. But I never, you know, put money with it. And to sign a contract at that large amount, you know, it's extremely exciting for me, for my family. But, you know, my thing has always been to continue to work, you know, to continue to always try to improve. You know, when I was out of high school and I wasn't going straight into college, you know, I didn't want to just sit on my parents' couch. I wanted to work and earn my way. And that's the same way I approach basketball. And hopefully I can, you know, install that in my children. But it's a lot of money. I can't lie. But, you know, I'm just happy that, you know, that part of, you know, my career is taken care of. And now my focus can be just trying to win games and trying to help bring this organization and this city a championship.
When Hedo Turkoglu was in town, I was at the hotel where he was staying, and one of the bellmen told me that you put your mom in, up at the same place. It was a special occasion. She was coming to town, and he took her into the room. And the door opened, and she looked at the view of the city, and she started crying because it was like, I'm in this amazing room. My son has paid for it. What was your mom's reaction to this deal?
My mom's reaction, you know, actually that occasion was my parents' anniversary. And, you know, they've been, you know, such a big part, you know, of my life, you know, as people know. But, you know, especially, you know, when you brought that moment about on the docks, I mean, she was there with me every morning. She used to make me a lunch every day to go to work. So, you know, her reaction, you know, this whole week when she knew the deal was close is she said her and my dad keep pinching each other. You know, they keep just wondering, you know, is this really real? You know, because, you know, they sacrificed a lot to give me a much better life than they had. So, you know, and give them a chance to enjoy life and have some smiles because they did such a wonderful job, I think, with not only raising me but my brothers and sisters. So, she's been in tears for the last 5 days, but that's how she is. You know, she cries when I score, you know, my first point. She cries when I score my last point.
Oh, that's great. What'll keep you motivated?
Winning. You know, after I signed the contract and I was sitting at home with my fiance and we were talking, you know, I was excited about it, but it just, for me, it just didn't feel complete. It was like, you know, I tried my whole life to win an NBA championship and signing this contract, it didn't complete me. You know, I felt like, you know, what's going to complete me is being the best team in the NBA and being one of the best players. So, you know, for anybody who has those worries about me folding it in, you know, that's the furthest from the truth. You know, I prided myself on winning games and winning championships. And at the end of the day, I mean, I sit there and I watch the Lakers win it this year. You know, I watched Boston win it last year. And that's what's going to make me ultimately happy. So that's my goal.
We're visiting with Brandon Roy here on the Bald-Faced Truth. Brandon, I'm going to let some Blazer fans ask you some questions now. We've got Nick in Lake Oswego. Nick, you are on with Brandon Roy.
Hey, Brandon. I'm a huge fan. I mean, first off, I think the cars on I-5 should part ways for, in my opinion, is the Blazers version of Moses. But I just wanted to ask you, I mean, Jordan, Bird, Magic, I mean, the way you finish games is so incredible to me. I mean, it's really fascinating. I tried those moves in my pickup games, and, of course, it turned it over, but it's fun to watch you. So what do you take from their games to add to yours? What have you done growing up, you know, like Garfield and stuff, to elevate your game to use bits and pieces of theirs?
Well, the thing I did, you know, as a kid growing up, you know, I would love to watch NBA games and I would love to watch great players, but I got the most enjoyment watching them late in games. And it wasn't just how they made shots, but it was how they carried themselves. You know, they had a quiet confidence about them where, you know, it rubbed off on everyone around. You know, you would see Jordan's teammates and you would see, you know, Magic's teammates. They all had a confidence about them that, hey, Magic was going to get it done or Bird was going to get it done. So I always prided myself on not being the best player in the first quarter or being the best player in the second quarter. I wanted to be there when the game was on the line, which is the fourth quarter of game. So I take a lot of pride in that. And my biggest thing is it's never pressure. For me, it's an opportunity to go out there and try to deliver something special.
Tony in Portland has a question. Tony, you got Brandon Roy. Go ahead.
Hey, Brandon, pleasure to talk to you, man. Congratulations on the contract. As a lifetime Blazer fan, man, you've earned it. No worries on you folding it in at all.
Thank you very much, man. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. I actually took my daughter down to meet you when you went to the Sportsman Show earlier, late last year. How do you envision Andre Miller changing the dynamic of the Blazers?
Well, I think the biggest thing he'll bring is leadership to our team. You know, me and LaMarcus and you know, Coach Nate, of course, have tried to, you know, to do that. Even Coach Nate would say that, you know, you need a player out there to do it. And you know, I would go to Coach Nate a number of times this season, and I would say, you know, Coach, there's times during the game I wish there was an older veteran guy around to help, you know, maybe show me the way. And I think that Andre Miller, you know, he's the perfect guy for that. And not only help me out, I think, you know, Greg and LaMarcus will benefit extremely from having, you know, a pass first point guard and a point guard that has an aura about himself. I mean, he's a he's a crafty guy. He's been in this league for a number of years, and he's excited about being here, and he's excited about making us better. So that makes me, you know, think that, hey, this guy's going to help make this team, you know, even better than a 54-win team last season.
Do you have any worries that the ball won't be in your hands as much, that you'll suffer a little bit from that, or is this a win-win?
No, I honestly, I think it's a win-win. I think there'll be situations in the game where, you know, I'll tell Andre, you know, these are moments where, you know, I need the ball. I think I can create. And then I'm also excited about the challenge of running the floor and taking that pressure off of me, where I don't have to always worry about controlling a team. You know, I can go out and play free and just, you know, have fun running the wing, you know, leaking out for some fast breaks, having a guy that kick it up. So I think it's a win-win. I think, you know, there'll be moments where we'll have to establish chemistry because, you know, we haven't played together. But eventually I think he'll learn my game, and he'll learn that, you know, hey, this is when B wants it. And then there'll be other moments where he'll tell me, hey, no, B, run the floor and get out on the break. So I'm just excited about the opportunity to play with a guy as good as him.
Tabor in Portland, your question for Roy.
Brandon, you're the man, my favorite player. As a Blazer fan, I'm extremely happy you're going to be around in the Blazer uniform for a long time, and I hope that you sign a third contract so you can play out your career as a Portland Trailblazer.
Thank you.
My question, I was curious why you declined an invitation to the USA Olympic team, because I was disappointed. The USA basketball would benefit tremendously from having such a consummate professional and talent like yourself to represent USA.
Yeah, you know, that was something me and my agent talked about a lot, you know, after the season ended. And, you know, before last year, I had a meniscus surgery going into the season, and I never felt like I was 100% the whole year. And a big thing for me was to rest this summer and try to get my body as close to 100% as possible. So, you know, he had my agent, Bob Myers, had a number of conversations with USA Basketball, and they understood, you know, where I was coming from, and said that, you know, if I do want to play in the future, that they're not going to hold this summer against me. So it was something that, you know, I wanted to put, you know, my team first, and I wanted to put the organization first and say, look, I want to get as healthy as I can. This is a big year for us. And I just didn't want to risk going out there and not allowing my knee to get back to being 100%, which it is now, and I'm really excited about.
Brandon, you know, I've covered the NFL, Major League Baseball. I've been around guys in their off season. When you go away in the off season, you like go. Like, you're gone. You're a ghost. I mean, you really value that personal time, don't you?
Yeah, I really value it. I mean, you know, I don't like to disappear, but, you know, at the same time, the season is really long. And you know, the organization understands when it's the season time, you know, I'm there to do whatever I can to help this team, to do whatever to help the community. But in the off season, it's what I feel like I owe to my family for being away so long. And, you know, I have two really, you know, small babies, and it just feels like every day I'm gone, I miss out on them. So trust me, I'm going to try to do a much better job of not disappearing in the off season.
No, if you need to do it, you do it. You know,
I just love that time. I mean, you know, I'm a family guy. If I didn't play in the NBA, you know, I would be just a regular old average Joe. I mean, that's just how I view myself, and just try to spend as much time with my family and my parents and just the people, you know, that I was with, you know, before I made it, you know, to this level.
Here's Aaron in Portland. Aaron, you have a question for Brandon Roy. Go ahead.
Yes, hi, Brandon. I am a huge fan, and I'm so happy you're staying in Portland with us for another 5 years. And
thank you.
My question, I'm on my way down to Eugene with my friend Leo, and we want to know what is better about signing this huge contract. Is it that your lifestyle is going to be changed because of all this money, or that your family is now more financially stable? And do you think this changes your motivation?
Yeah, well, for me, it's all those things. I mean, I'm excited that my family, you know, will be taken care of. And, you know, the biggest thing, like I was saying earlier today in the press conference was, you know, I'm going to be a trailblazer, you know, for the next 6 years. And, you know, for the moment I came to this team, you know, I couldn't have been anywhere else. And actually before I came to the team, you know, when I was getting drafted, I was drafted by Minnesota. And, you know, for about 20 minutes there, I thought I was going to actually have to go there. And I was so disappointed because I knew Portland was right there at seven. So, you know, since the moment I even got close to playing on an NBA team, you know, I wanted to be in Portland. And since they secured me for the next 5 years, including this last year on my rookie deal, you know, I'm just excited about being a part of this team, a part of this organization, because there's such great people. You know, we have an owner who really cares about his team and his players, and that's hard to find in this league. So it's, you know, a number of everything, you know, being close to home, you know, I just think this is the perfect situation for me.
Now, I ran into you at the end of the Blazers season a couple years ago. You were hurt, you were out, and you were holding Brandon Jr. in your arms. Nobody was around, and I walked by you, and I was like, I hope he never loses that. And you talked about that alone time you like with your kids. What's the best part, not basketball, just family, being around your fiance and the two young ones?
I think the best part about it is, you know, I get to watch them grow. You know, now I see why my parents, you know, they smile at me in a way, you know, before I had my kids, I never understood. But, you know, there's some days, you know, my son, he learns new words. He comes into the, for me, it's just like the coolest thing in the world. And now my daughter's growing and she's waving bye-bye and hi when I walk in the room. And, I mean, those are moments that are, you know, they're priceless. You know, those are things that, you know, contracts, basketball, wins and losses, you know, none of it can amount to those moments with the baby. So, you know, that's something that I'll never lose. I mean, you know, I enjoy that. And I enjoy how much the fans and the people of Portland, you know, embrace my children.
And right now with this team, are you confident with this team, or does it need another piece?
Right now, no, I'm confident with the team. You know, you can always add another piece. I mean, if you watch, you know, how the Lakers and San Antonio and Boston, how they're adding pieces every day, you know, you always can, but it has to be the right piece. You know, I was talking to Kevin Pritchard, and the thing we liked about Andre Miller was he wanted to be here. He wanted to come here and help us win a championship. And if a guy doesn't want to do that, then we don't want him. So, you know, I think we have a really good team right now. We have to work. We have to get better. But I like what we have right now. I mean, I'm excited about our team. I can't wait to start working out and start preparing and starting to establish some chemistry with some of the new faces.
All right, Brandon, thank you for coming on the show. Drive safely.
Oh, yeah, I will, and thanks for having me.
All right, there's Brandon Roy.
Blake to inbound. The Blazers have a 20-second timeout. Nate McMillan deciding whether to use it. Blake now throws to Roy. Brandon, a three-pointer out front. Hit it! Yes, he did! Oh, yeah!
Wow! Are you kidding me?
The natural buries a 30-footer at the buzzer, and the Blazers run off the court, a winner by two.
You're listening to the best of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. Stay tuned for more.
Something is about to happen.
BFT.
No, listen up, everyone.
Let's go. The Bald-Faced Truth.
John Canzano.
I gotta say, I love him most of the time. I think he's right on.
He's okay.
John's great.
He's a little unusual.
Live every afternoon, 12 to 3 p.m.
I hate that guy because he just never knows what he's talking about.
I think he does a damn good job.
That's my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Now, from the Pac West Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a Bald-Faced Truth. Welcome to a special edition of the Best of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show.
Basketball legend Rick Majerus passed away in December of 2012. Shortly before that, he did an interview on the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. Listen to that. Rick Majerus, head coach, St. Louis University, joining us now. He's got the Atlantic 10 Conference Tournament going on. He has a game tomorrow, and he joins us from the road. How are you, Coach?
I'm great, thank you. How about yourself?
When you look around, what do you see as you flip around and watch different games?
Well, you know, all of tournament play becomes more half-court oriented. There's more apprehension. The possessions are more valued in the NCAA, certainly, but in the Catholic Youth Organization, ball in Oregon, it'll be that way. That's the first thing. The second thing is careless shot selection. You know, Don Haskins, I played against him, the great UTEP coach who was known for the Texas Western National Championship in 66, used to say, son, there's a reason they aren't covering you out there. And some of these guys continue to launch. You know, the most important offensive statistic may be shot allocation, shot distribution. You know, your best players get the best shot. And if they do, get the most shots. If they do, then you've got a greater likelihood for success.
How do you get kids to realize that, though? I mean, you're working with kids who will think they all have the best shot.
Well, I'm very blunt with them, and I just try to tell them. And you know, if you take any team and you say, let's pick up and play horse, or pick up and play a shooting game to 10, and ask the players to pick the best shooters, the last guy standing will invariably be the best shooter, the worst shooter, pardon me, in their opinion. You know, I mean, players know, people know. You know, I mean, like, you know, there's a great adage in the NBA, cutters cut and shooters shoot. You know, like my guy Andre Miller was not a very good shooter, but he was a good passer and a great cutter and a poster, and he played to his strengths. You know, he didn't try to do something that he couldn't do, you know. And I think you just got to sit the kid down, and he's got to go through the realization, is it more important to the team that I do what I can do best, or is my own personal gratification take a priority, you know, and shooting percentages are indicative of that too. You know, nothing lies at the three throw line. You know, you know what a 180 shooter is? This is something I always watch. A 180 shooter is the compilation of your 2-point field goals, your 3-point field goals, and your three throws. A great shooter is around 180, and then it goes down from there. You know, like for example, Reggie Miller was a one. Van Horn, who played for me, was above 180. Miller was above 180. Hornacek was about 180 in the NBA. You know, so if you're held at Novak, it's a 180 shooter at the Knicks. And that's you know, that's how you know who you are. The statistics don't lie.
Rick Majerus, our guest, former Utah coach, now the coach at St. Louis University. You strike me as a guy like Tark, and I cover Tark, that you love basketball, and you're just talking about that. But, you know, what do you do that's not basketball related? Do you do other things? Do you play golf? Do you do anything away from basketball, or is it all basketball for you?
Well, the golf question is interesting. I said I would never hire an assistant coach who had a trailer hitch or a set of golf clubs. You know, and, you know, I'll go to a golf tournament for fundraising, and I'll hit a couple balls. But, you know, my two favorite golf clubs, and I don't play at all, are the sand wedge and the rake. So, you know, I like other things. I like body surfing, so that's a bad spot to be in St. Louis and in Utah. But I go to Hawaii this summer and do some of that. I love the ocean. I like ocean swimming. I swim every day. I love the theater. I love plays. I'm a Mark Twain aficionado. I'm going to go to a Mark Twain sort of festival at University of California. You know, there's just a variety of interest. I like to read. I mean, I really enjoy. In the fall, I went to a couple of plays, and we're going to go back to New York. We went to War Horse, the play, which I thought was better than War Horse, the movie, maybe even more poignant. But, you know, kids today may not like it because in War Horse, the play, you had to use your imagination. Today, you know, with all these electronical things, like I don't like my guys on a plane or the bus plugging in and just tuning out. I tell them, talk to your teammate. Find out what he's about. You know, Conklin has a lot different lifestyle than, say, the kid we got from the inner city of Chicago. You know, and we've got a kid from Australia. We've got a kid from Greece. We've got a kid from Canada. I've always had those foreign kids. And I've enjoyed them. Otto Metal was an academic All-American who played for me. And had a great career first with the Atlanta Hawks and then went on. And, you know, it's interesting in life to sit down and talk to somebody from a foreign country and to see what their perspective is, you know, politically and otherwise. So, you know, I'm just not a basketball Jones, but I do love ball. I really like the game. I mean, to me, it's fun to look at the film, and it's, you know, it's great to put together and play 3D chess. Scouting reports, it's great to go to the guy's graduation. I probably will come to Conklin's wedding. I'm going to make it at all costs if something comes up with my family, my sisters and my nieces. So I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm a basketball Jones, though. I think somewhat you got to be, you know.
Rick Majerus is our guest, men's basketball coach at St. Louis University. You've worked in the NBA as an assistant coach and on ESPN as a commentator as well. The Pac-12, I'm watching the games today. It's not good defensive basketball. It's sloppy. What has happened to this conference?
That's a great point because it used to be terrific, especially when I was out west at Utah. I think, quite frankly, the coaching isn't what it had been. I feel that, you know, they've got these palaces now, and a lot of them recruit off of paper. Like, okay, this guy's ranked by scout.com, 67th best player in the country. You know, like, look at going to the national championship game last year, Matt Howard. That was the kid from Butler. I mean, he's from an hour away from campus, and a lot of schools don't recruit him. You know, look at Conklin. You don't think Conklin could have helped either Oregon or Oregon State get to the NCAA this year? I think part of it is they're parochial in their recruiting. I think another part of it is they've gotten fat and soft with the tremendous facilities they have. They've all got unbelievable facilities now, with probably the exception of Oregon State. Would that be an accurate statement? I think it is.
Yeah, and they, you know, they're trying to get the practice facility going there, but Matt Knight Arena is incredible in Oregon and down at Oregon, and Oregon State is behind the curve.
Matt Knight Arena is the finest arena, in my opinion, in the country. I mean, recruiting Oregon to me is like recruiting. I think, first of all, recruiting to UCLA is like recruiting an alcoholic to a New Year's Eve party. I mean, what's not to like? You know, you got great weather. You got tremendous academics. You got a tradition of embracing the black athlete. You know, C. Rayford Johnson, Jackie Robinson, among others, Jabbar, formerly Lou Alcindor. But after that, I think Oregon is the same deal. I mean, phenomenal facilities, great place to live, wonderful people, basketball enthusiasm. You're the pro team in town, and a great educational offer. So, but I think a lot of these teams, now we played Washington this year, and they have some talent. Some of them are hurt by guys leaving early, but guys leave early everywhere. Everybody knows that the Pac-10 has been down and taken in several hits, it doesn't play up to the tradition of the past. What you're right there on a daily basis. What do you think it is?
Well, as I said, they don't play defense. The coach, I thought, you know, the name coaches that are there are guys who have won in the past. But even today, when you see Oregon State beat Washington, you realize that the gap between number one and number nine is not that big, and they're all kind of a muddled mess in the middle, and the basketball is not real crisp, and you know, they missed a bunch of free throws down the stretch, 25 turnovers in the game. It's just not great basketball.
So, you know, maybe I'm talking to the septuagenarians in the audience, but I'm here to tell you, Ralph Miller was one of the greatest coaches ever, the legendary coach at Oregon. And then, of course, you had Marv Harshman at Washington, and you had some great guys like Newell at Cal. And, you know, it's just I just feel that somehow the stability of the coaching hasn't been. You know, like look at how many guys turned down the Oregon job last year. I mean, who would turn that job down?
Yeah, that was weird. And I look at you especially because your guy was at Ball State, Utah, and now at St. Louis. You won at Ball State, you won at Utah, you're winning at St. Louis now, 24-6 this year. You know, you've won at places that maybe you've got some challenges. Wouldn't you like to be at a place where, you know, you could recruit like UCLA or USC?
Well, I had those jobs all offered to me. And I was at Utah, and I was very happy. Plus, we had a lot of success at Utah now. I mean, don't forget,
sure,
we went to four Sweet 16s, two Elite Eights, a national championship game, won 11 or 12 conference championships. That's pretty good. Went to, you know, and you know, what price is happiness? Plus, I would have to recruit the players and tell them that I would be there, and I lived up to that promise. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the challenge. Then I took the SC job, and my mom got sick, and you know, I tried to clear it with her ahead of time, and I did. And then the night before, or two nights, and the night after I took the job, my mom called me. And, you know, you only get one biological mom in life. I love my mom a lot. She was a great lady. I just put her, you know, to rest finally. She passed this last August. And it was an honor and a privilege to take care of her. It was great to be in hospice with her for the last 100 days. You know, like I always tell my players, no player remembers all the time about, you might have the big win that you remember where Oregon beats Oregon State. You may have the NCAA appearance, but you always know if you didn't get a good education, and you always know if your family wasn't first. And it's all, to me, family first. I mean, it's the most important thing we have in life, because those are the only people that'll love you remotely in terms of unconditionally. So, you know, it isn't as though I didn't have my chance. And then when I took St. Louis, I wanted to get the Minnesota job, and they wanted Tubby. And then I had to go within 5 hours of home, and I had to get my mom's okay on it. And within 5 hours, I could be home from Minnesota in a car and a 45-minute plane flight. And that kind of factored in. But that, you know, I enjoyed the challenges I've had. I mean, I think that we're going to be we only lose Conklin out of our first seven this year, and then we have the player of the year in Indianapolis coming in. We have the best guard in the state of Illinois coming in from Doc Rivers' old school, Maywood East. Proviso East in Maywood, Illinois. Also the home of Ray Nitschke, I might add. How about you got Doc Rivers, Michael Finley, Ray Nitschke, all coming from the same place?
That ain't bad.
No. I mean, Nitschke's got a memorabilia kind of corner there. No one knows who he is or what or whatever. I feel like taking that stuff home and giving it the respect it's due. You know, they got Nitschke's helmet from when he was at Illinois. They got his shoes from the Packers, his Packer jersey. You know, and a great Packer legend. By the way, speaking of Packers, Conklin's grandpa played for the Green Bay Packers.
You know, you mentioned history. I covered a Jim Thorpe football game. You know, it was the Jim Thorpe Hall of Fame game years ago in Colorado, and none of the players knew who Jim Thorpe was. Does that drive you crazy that young kids come in and they don't seem as educated or versed, or is that just kids in general?
No, it drives me. You know what? I mean, we don't do a good job, like Oscar Robertson. But the biggest thing about Oscar is what a good guy he was. I try to make sure my guys understand what a great student Duncan was. You know, and yeah. Why Duncan was successful. I had the great fortune to play against Duncan when we were like two at Utah, and I think those guys were three in the country. And Duncan compartmentalized his life. I mean, he does that now. He's a happy guy. Qualification. You know, it's the academic experience first, then secondly to that, it's, you know, the basketball experience. But I guess the thing about it is a lot of these kids today, the AAU program have hurt the kids, and parents have hurt the kids unknowingly. You know, they're helicopter parents. They're always hovering, and they want to take all the pain and all the hurt out of their child's life. You know, you're from soccer, Little League soccer through Little League baseball, you know, you're better off learning to lose. You know, we have our greatest gains because of losses. The greatest, and you know, these parents nowadays are so one-dimensional. I mean, now we're on to a family subject, but just watch the Jerry Springer show.
But, you know, you get the kids away from parents. Like when you get Conklin, you know, and Conklin's not a good example of this, but when you get a kid like him away at St. Louis, you're getting him away from home. Do you find that finally you have them to yourself now, or do you still have hoverers and AAU people hanging around?
Well, when I recruit the parents, I try to tell them, look, I'll talk to you about, you know, academics. I'll talk to you about if your wife has cancer. I'll talk to you about, you know, if his girlfriend's pregnant. I'll talk to you about if he's deciding to be a priest or a businessman. But I will never, ever talk basketball with you. I try to tell them, look, I forgot more ball than you'll ever know. I mean, I don't mean that arrogantly or egotistically. I mean that factually. Like, no one would pretend to tell a dentist how to fill a cavity or a lawyer how to adjudicate a case. And that's kind of the fun of sports. But with parents, you know, I tell him, why don't you be a good mom and a good dad? You know, and he's got a pretty good coach. And I don't want to be a mom and dad. I love him. I'll try to help him. But, you know, it's critical that you guys understand, you know, what you're getting into here. And most parents, if you approach them that way, and if I see the parent is all whacked out, I just pass. I don't care how good they are.
Have you ever done that, where you saw a kid that was so good and you were like, no, I just can't deal with mom or dad?
Oh, yeah, because they've lost perspective. And you know, it's important that you maintain perspective. You got to put this thing in play. All these guys think they're going to be a pro. I mean, you know, look, I mean, that whole Pac-10 right now, there might be four pros. I mean, if I ask you, now Washington's got two, and I think they got two guys who go out early, sadly. But, you know, I'm trying to think of who else. Washington has two in their – I know their numbers and not their names because we played them. But who else has – I don't think UCLA is a pro. SC doesn't seem to appear to have a pro. If there's one at Arizona State, he's done a good job hiding. there's none at – there may be one of those freshmen at Arizona. But tell me who the pros are in that league. And then in any league, really. –
Coach Rick Majerus is our guest here on 750 The Game. Now, you've educated us on a bunch of stuff. I'm going to help you out when you're recruiting this Oregon kid. You got to say Oregon, not Oregon.
Oh, okay. I always pronounce that wrong.
People are texting into the show going, please correct him. You've got to correct him. You got to say Oregon, like, you know, a piano. Oregon. You're playing in Oregon.
Oregon.
There you go. I'm going to, because you're going to go in that living room, and mom's going to go, I don't like the way he pronounces Oregon. And then that's all you need is one crazy mom.
Yeah, but no one's eating more huckleberries, blueberries, or blackberries, whatever. I love the sequel. I love Oregon. I love going up there. I love going to the Nike campus. I've always enjoyed my trips to Oregon. I ran in the Betty Cronin up there once.
Yeah.
And that Saturday market is priceless in downtown there.
Oh, yeah.
Plus, you have maybe the best rapid transit in terms of light rail in America. You know, the most comprehensive and the most well-run.
You could be a tour guide for America. Like, you know a little bit about everything, don't you?
Well, I've been everywhere. I mean, I when I was at Utah, I was recruiting Doliak, I took a vacation to the Oregon coast. That was amazing. And I'll go there for a day or two. I mean, if I come out to Conklin's wedding, I'd like to. And again, I want to reiterate what our success is. We're second in the A-10, and we beat Xavier twice. We beat Washington. We've had a great year. And we owe a large part of that to Brian Conklin, and he's from right there in Eugene, Oregon. His high school coach's name escapes me. He played for a good high school coach, and just terrific parents and a wonderful family. I think he's going to go back and live in Oregon. Did I say that?
Yeah, right? You got it. See?
All right. Probably for the rest of his life, but who knows? I mean, he's going to have a great life, and he's married a wonderful gal, and he's had a great basketball career. He speaks to the term student-athlete as much as any player I've ever had. It's fun, too, to see Doliak now as he gets his master's degree in physics. Now he's going to get his Ph.D., and then he's going to teach physics. He was going to go to medical school, and he was all set. He passed his MCATs, and he was on his way, but then he's a little old now. But he likes the money he made now. Doliak's got...
Millions
in the two figures, let me tell you that. Wonderful parents there, too. His dad's still a dentist practicing in Portland, and his mom does some volunteer work. He's got just a phenomenal family as well.
Coach, thank you for your time. We appreciate it. It was gold. We're getting a ton of text messages from people, and especially people who have got young kids playing basketball, taking your stuff to heart.
Hey, anytime. I mean, you know, it doesn't always have to be about Conklin. As I said, what I might do is come up, and maybe you can take me out for Oregon berry pie. There's so many places I love up there.
It's a date. You've got my number. You let me know when you're coming.
I'm coming this summer. I'm going to go to the Nike store, and I'm coming for Conklin's wedding.
All right. We'll do it.
All the best to you, man. Thank you so much.
Coach, thanks. Coach Rick Majerus.
Want more of the best of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show? Leave it right here.
Make sure you're subscribed to the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show on SoundCloud and iTunes. You won't miss a thing. Grab a podcast. Also, make sure you follow me on Twitter, at John Canzano BFT. More of the best of the BFT still ahead. La, 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 la.
The Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano. You're listening to the best of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show.
Well, anytime a draft comes and goes, you think about characters in the Blazers' past, the general managers who have come and gone, Steve Patterson, John Nash, Rich Cho, but maybe none more popular at some times and more confusing at other times than Kevin Pritchard, who came in and became the franchise's golden boy and was the general manager until Paul Allen decided he wasn't on a draft day. Very clumsy firing, but Kevin Pritchard obviously has landed on his feet and finds himself now with the Indiana Pacers as the general manager. But some 15 months after the Trailblazers cut Kevin Pritchard loose, he broke his silence on this radio show. This is where he came, and I'll never forget him coming in studio in June, after about a full year plus after he had been let go, but Kevin Pritchard coming in studio and letting his silence be broken as part of the show, and you get some insight into the inner workings of the Blazers organization, the pressure under which a general manager works, and certainly Kevin Pritchard sounding at the time a little bit confused about being let go, but here's that interview with Kevin Pritchard. Kevin Pritchard is now with us in studio, former Blazers GM, executive, hasn't spoken. It's been 53 weeks since you talked.
It has, yeah.
How does that feel to get in front of a microphone again?
You know, I'm a little nervous. You know, my heart's beating a little bit, but, you know, I'm excited. I'm excited about it.
Blazer fans, you know, have not yet, I think, made sense of what happened with you two drafts ago, and the draft day was very disappointing. Paul Allen himself didn't even speak after that draft. I know the media was frustrated with him. Have you ever gotten an explanation for why you were let go?
I've not had that sit down or you know, one to one with Paul after that day. So no, you know, a lot of people ask me why Rich Cho was fired. I get that question quite a bit, and you know, the honest answer is I'm not sure why I was fired. So how can I answer why he was fired? So. No, not really.
When you look at, the time that you worked for Paul Allen, what was it like to work for him? I know from the outside in, he's not a guy who does a ton of interviews, and I don't think fans know him all that well. What's it like to be on the inside?
Well, he's very complete in that he wants you to do the work and get to a certain place, and then he's going to challenge it. And, you know, quite frankly, when we were going through complex ideas, and what I don't think people understand is that how much the draft is complicated. People say, well, it's 5 minutes, but you go through all kinds of if, then what, right? I mean, it's just millions of those, it feels like. And he's unbelievable at sitting in the draft room and going through a decision tree and trying to figure out exactly what is going to happen. If then, then what? And he provided a lot of value with that. And, you know, I learned a lot. He demands, he's very demanding every single day. In the 7.5 years I was there, I'm not sure that there was many days that we didn't communicate, at least by email or by phone. But he's very interested. And I welcomed that. We had developed a great relationship the first 4 or 5 years I was there. And we had an ability to talk pretty quickly and get right down to the main issues. But he's demanding. He's tough.
Kevin Pritchard's our guest here on 750 The Game, former Blazers GM joining us. When you had a good relationship with him, the perception was that you were in contact with him all the time. It was a surprise to me when Tom Penn was let go, and I sort of got inklings that you could be in trouble as well. How surprised were you to suddenly see the tide turn?
Well, a little bit, yeah. You know, I had felt really good about where we had taken the program. And, you know, Nate McMillan's a hell of a coach. I hope he stays here for a long, long time because he is good. There's a lot of people that sort of get on him, but he is a good coach. And, you know, Mike Bourne, Chad Buchanan, we had a really good internal culture. Felt like we were all pulling towards the right space. And, you know, you're okay with the external stuff. You know, you're going to get hit. When you stand in the GM's place, you're going to get hit. The arrows are flying at you. But I always wanted us to be very close, be very organized, and to be able to make the best decisions. And I thought we did a decent job. So if you're asking me, was I a little surprised? Yeah, I was.
When you look at the decisions that you made, let's go back. I mean, the LaMarcus Aldridge, Brandon Roy draft. Would you say that was your highlight as GM, that draft day where you made those deals and came out of there with what you thought were the best two players?
Probably not. I think there were other things that happened behind the scenes that maybe not so much at the forefront with the bigger decisions. In terms of bigger decisions, absolutely. And I think the thing to note is what you try to do is put processes in place to make the best decisions. And that's, you know, if you spend a lot of time on the process, I'm a big believer, and I think you and I have talked about this many times, is winning is a product of doing little decisions every single day correctly. And when I took over, I felt like the most important thing every single day was to get processes into place so that the decisions were made were consistent, whether it hiring a coach or drafting a player or trading for a player. I wanted a process in place. And, you know, I think we did that. And I know Chad pretty well right now. He's doing it. The one thing I would tell you is I was there 7.5 years, his best 7.5 years of my life. Every single day I woke up, and it's funny because I wake up today, I wake up in the middle of last year, and I'll immediately wake up and I think, God, we need to do this. And I'll think, well, I'm not even with the Blazers anymore. So it was hard for me to divorce that a little bit. Still is today because, you know, I'm such emotionally invested still in their success because I know everybody there. And
those were guys you brought in and the guys you drafted, and you hear people, you know, talking about Brandon as he struggles and Odin as he struggles. And I want to ask you about all that. And I want to ask you, too about what it was like, you know, to be in and on that Odin Durant draft day and how you look back at that now. Will you stick around? I got to hold over for a break because we went long last time, but
gotta pay some bills.
Gotta pay the bills. Kevin, more with Kevin Pritchard coming up next. Leave it here on 750 The Game. Bald Faith Truth here on 750. This hour is brought to you by Shane Co. I'm in with Kevin Pritchard, former Blazers GM. This is what we're going to do. I'm going to ask him some more questions, and he's agreed he would like, he's okay with you asking a question as well. If you're a listener to the show, you got a question for Kevin Pritchard, former Blazers GM, or you just want to tell him something, speak your mind, 503-417-7575. That's another reason why you come here. I give you the opportunity to talk to Kevin Pritchard. We've done this on a number of occasions before, but I'm going to open the phone lines to listeners of the show, Blazers fans who want answers. You're not going to get executives from the teams right now to talk because of the lockout. Players are scattered, but you got an opportunity to talk to Kevin Pritchard, former Blazers GM, at 503-417-7575. What do you think about the lockout? Did you see this coming?
Yeah, it's been long coming. You know, it's tough because I'm a basketball fan. I want to see basketball, and I think the game is in one of the best places it's been in a long time, maybe since like late 90s, right? You get Dallas winning a championship going against Miami, and you know, it's a great series, and I think the majority of people got the winner that they wanted.
When you look at, you know, that draft in which you take Greg Oden, there's a lot of talk right now with the Blazers making a qualifying offer. What's the plan long term? It seems as though, you know, he's probably the biggest storyline for the franchise right now. And does he stay with the organization? Does he develop? What do they do? What do you think of what's happened with Oden?
Well, I think you got to kind of step back and say, you know, and look at the analytics. You got to say you got to make a couple assumptions. First of all, let's just for a second say he can come back and be the equal player that he was before he got hurt. And he only played a few games. I mean, it was in the course of his career, missed a lot of games. But let's say if you can get to that point, and the doctors will help you get there, and you got to play some hunches. But of all the free agents this summer, he ranks out number one in the analytics. And so how in the world, first of all, there's not many good bigs coming to the draft in the next couple years. And it's been shown that when Greg plays, he is a true difference maker. So I think the big thing is you got to qualify him. You got to see what number comes at him. But I can tell you this anecdotally, a lot of people around the league would love to have Greg Oden and maybe think that he is the missing piece to a championship.
All right, let's take some phone calls. There's some people who've called in. I want to go to Randy on line one. Let's go to Randy, who's on line one here. Randy, you got a question for Kevin Pritchard.
Yeah, a question that pertains to the pick of Greg Oden and Paul Allen's book. And I think Paul kind of said that he deferred to the coaches and the management on that pick. He kind of bowed out of it. And I was wondering, is that really the way it went down? Because I remember Kevin said in the Oregonian I read that Durant was one of the best workouts he's ever seen. And just wondering if they really chose what they felt was the best available draft choice in Oden.
Yeah, you know, it's the question that I probably get most. You know, we had studied, I've never studied a person or a player or players like I did Durant Oden. It was every single minute of every single second of their entire careers. And we were going back into AAU. And the one thing that kept hitting us really hard was Greg Oden lost three games until he got to Ohio State, and then he got hurt again, and then he only lost a couple in that. And that was over hundreds and hundreds of games. And the overwhelming thing that we got from everybody we talked to was the cat doesn't care if he scores. He doesn't care if he does anything, but he's about winning. And we had been really trying to change our culture for guys to really put the team first and not care about stats and really being about winning. And we thought he was the pick at the time. Now, I will tell you, we did the same thing with Durant, and they said he's going to be the best scorer in the league. He's going to be an amazing player, and he's going to win. But we just felt like Greg was going to be that guy that just doesn't lose basketball games. And we saw it. We, right before he got hurt, we were talking as a management group and we said, man, doesn't it feel like this is becoming a little bit like Greg's team? Because in the locker room after a loss, he would get really, really upset, and he demands out of his teammates probably more than any player I've ever been around outside Larry Bird. I mean, when he lost, he lets his teammates know what they got to do the next game. So we were feeling so comfortable going into the rest of that, the second half of the season, that we were going to be good because Greg was coming along.
Let's go to Timothy, who's in Southeast. You got a question for Kevin Pritchard.
I do. Kevin, how much control did you have? How much say-so did you have in your 7 years? You said Paul Allen's pretty involved and very, you know, just very involved in what the team did. How much say-so as a GM did you have?
Well, the ultimate decision comes down to the owner, right? I mean, it's his team. It is his club. He can do what he wants. He can bring his ball and take it whenever he leaves or whenever he wants. But the one thing I will tell you is Paul gave us a lot of ownership. And if we made a mistake, he would hold us accountable. And that's all I ever wanted. That's all any manager ever wants. He's very involved. He wants to ask the questions. If they don't make sense, you're going to have to define the answer in a better way or a different way. And for me, I was great with that. For many, many years, that was, you know, I guess status quo for us. And we were used to it. And you develop that relationship of how to sort of answer it the way that you feel like is appropriate and correctly. And, you know, we had won 21 games when sort of I came into my own here. And we went from 21 wins to 31 to 41 to 54 during my tenure. And then we had some injuries and won 50 games. And to do that, you got to be able to do a few things. Number one, you have to align. You really do. I see a lot of teams out there right now that don't get aligned. And what I mean by that is owner, head coach, GM, best player or players on your team. You better be pointed in the right direction. And for me, that's probably the one thing that I take out of this, that if I ever get an opportunity again, I'm going to make sure every single day that we are aligned. It doesn't mean we agree on everything. As a matter of fact, the best thing you can do as a general manager is understand that there's conflict resolution. That was a thing I couldn't be taught. You can only be taught by getting in there because you're in the middle of every conflict. And I don't mean conflict like everybody's coming and banging their heads, but there's issues. And as a good general manager, I think there's some great general managers. I've had an opportunity this year to really learn from some of those guys and develop relationships. And they say the best thing they can do is never make the big issues become big. Always try to make them small. Now, in this world of Twitter and Facebook and quick media, it's tough. It is tough. You have to be on your toes. But that's the reason why guys like Sherry Hansen, girls like Sherry Hansen, sure, and Jim Taylor and Kyle, those guys are great because they're your eyes and ears. Hey, here's what might be, let's handle that right now. And then ultimately Tom Penn and Chad and Mike were so good because if we saw anything really quick, we'd try to get to it. But I think I'd do even more of that. And the other thing is just developing unbelievable relationships. When you see something that's not going right, get out in front of it in terms of a relationship, too. Not just an issue, but a relationship.
Let's go to Gerald, who's called in. Gerald, you got a question for Kevin Pritchard.
Yes, I do. My question is, was signing Brandon Roy to the 4-year max contract with the player option your brainchild or somebody else's?
It was all of ours, but I'll take full responsibility for it. The one thing that's not reported and you probably haven't seen out there is, did we know Brandon had issues health-wise? Absolutely. So there's two issues you got to address. If Brandon would have played the next year and been a free agent, there is no doubt he would have had 29 teams lined up to give him a 6-year extension instead of the 5-year that we gave him at a max deal. And the other thing that, you know, Larry Miller was a big part of, and Todd Lywicki, I give those guys a lot of credit, is on the last year of Brandon's deal, we made about a significant portion of it non-guaranteed, and we used that money, that holdback, to buy a secondary insurance policy. Brandon's fully insured. I wouldn't say fully, but I would say 80 to 90% now of his contract. So we did put in measures to make sure that we didn't foil that would be protected, the owner would be protected, and the franchise. That doesn't mean it comes off the cap. It means that if he gets hurt, the team will get refunded the money.
when you look at, you know, the direction that the Blazers are headed right now, and I know I reported recently that the Blazers had reached out to you. They didn't have a GM going. I know you don't want to talk about the details of that, but were you surprised that they reached out at all to you?
A little bit. But again, you know, I tried to leave on the best terms possible. Sometimes in divorce, it gets ugly. It's tough. It was very tough on me. I can tell you that emotionally, you know, you get scarred. And again, organizations are people, and I have amazing friends and mentors still within the Blazers that, boy, I care deeply. And I want them to have a great year this coming year if they have a season. And, you know, I'll always be a Blazer now. It's unique. I always attribute it to being like at Kansas basketball. Basketball is important. I always want to go where basketball is important because it's so important to me. And with that comes some difficulties, right? You know, the intense scrutiny that you come under. I'm good with that because people care around here, and that's why I still have a house and still live here.
The million-dollar question, and I think this tells me more than anything about, you know, your time with the Blazers. If they came back to you, and they say they're not interested, but if they came back to you, would you take that job, or are you better off with another organization?
Man, that's a tough question. My quick answer would be yes, because I'm so emotionally tied, and that, you know, I felt like I had an opportunity and we had an opportunity to do something pretty cool. And I wanted to finish it. I wanted to have the opportunity to finish it. And people would say, well, you know, maybe you didn't have the relationship with Paul Allen at the end, but I would tell you this. I enjoyed all the times, because what you find out, John, I think, and this is probably one of the biggest things when you work for an organization, is some of the tough times are important because you figure out who you are and who you want to be with. I don't know if that's the same in the newspaper or radio business, but we kind of felt like we knew who we wanted in the trenches. And that's fun, because then, you know, you get to point the guns at everybody else and you're going after everybody else. And sometimes that, you know, causes issues, but I enjoyed it. I mean, it was a great experience. And so to get back in there and do a dive bond, but I would say this, I think Chad Buchanan will be an excellent, excellent GM. He communicates. He cares. He's a hard worker. He's organized. You know, there are some things he's going to have to bolster, but that can be hired. Dick, you can bring in some experts in that. And as a collective group, I think that they're going to do a great job.
Kevin Pritchard, thank you for coming on.
Glad to do it.
I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. There he is, KP, former Blazers GM, breaking his silence.
You're listening to the best of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. Stay tuned for more.
I want you all to listen up. This is important stuff, all right?
Okay. Here we go.
The Bald-Faced Truth.
Call 503-417-7575 or 877-733-0750 or text to 64636.
Here we go in 3, 2.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a Bald-Faced Truth. Welcome to a special edition of the Best of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show.
So I want to leave you, though, today with what I thought was one of the most pivotal interviews of the radio show year, when we had Softy from KJR in Seattle on the show in front of the Oregon-Washington football game this last season. Softy was dancing on the Duck's grave before it was a grave, and he was talking about Mark Helfrich in a way that turns out would be prophetic. I want you to hear that interview. Softy from KJR Radio in Seattle, friend of the show, joins us. You're looking forward to this one, aren't you?
I am looking forward to it. How are you?
I'm good.
What's going on?
I'm good. Helfrich's seat is warm, and I'll give you credit. In the summer, you told me he's not the guy. You saw that.
Well, I mean, come on. I mean, anybody with a functioning eye socket can see that Mark Helfrich is not the guy. Give me a break, okay? I mean, look at the quarterback situation, number one. When you have to rely on a transfer for 2 years in a row because you've struck out recruiting for 2 years in a row on a quality quarterback to replace Marcus Mariota, I mean, that should tell you all you have to know. I mean, aren't there high school quarterbacks lining up by the dozen to play quarterback for the mighty, vaunted Oregon offense? And and get to have an Xbox in their locker and hang out with Phil Knight and get all the swag that comes along with being an Oregon Duck and wear 68 different uniform combinations over the course of your career. Aren't there just blue-chip high school quarterbacks all over the country that want to play football for Oregon? Where are they? And for 2 years in a row, you guys have to go to a transfer from an FCS school because you have no other option inside your locker room? That's ridiculous.
Softy, KJR Radio Seattle, joining us. You're enjoying this, though. I mean, like, if you're a Husky fan, you should just sit quiet and be like, Helfrich is the right guy, right?
There's obviously Saturday is a much different animal, okay? Yeah, watching the Cougars run all over Oregon was fun. Watching a backup quarterback come off the bench and torch that Oregon defense was fun. Watching my old pal Mike Riley knock out the Ducks in Lincoln was fun. But none of that stuff matters if the Huskies can't get this done on Saturday. And I would expect a much different response by Oregon in this game on Saturday. You know, look, I know it's a totally different animal, but there's a high school football team up in Seattle, Bellevue High, that had a long, long, long winning streak. And that ended a couple years ago against Eastside Catholic. And I remember watching those kids on the sideline. They were in tears because they were the ones that ended the streak. And I know that the guys down there now and Royce Freeman, players like that, that they have no desire to be known from here until the end of time as the group that lost the streak that allowed Washington to end that streak and finally win a football game. So I would expect a much different response from the Oregon Ducks on Saturday.
Chris Peterson saying he's not even talking streak with his guys. Your impressions of Peterson so far, I mean, he's blown everybody away, isn't he?
Yeah, well, he's a very hard guy to get to know, and I'm not sure if he wants anyone to know him, to be totally honest with you. Chris Peterson strikes me as the kind of guy that doesn't really enjoy his media obligations and just wants to coach football and be left the hell alone. I think a lot of people at Boise State had the same take on him. And, hey, look, you keep winning games like you won in Boise and like he's winning so far up here in Seattle, you can do whatever you want. But you know what, John, in regards to his take on, you know, he said today that he's not going to mention the streak. Look, we'll see if that actually happens, okay? That might be his response now.
Yeah.
But behind closed doors in front of his players during practice or pregame speech at the hotel on Friday night, pregame speech at the stadium on Saturday, I'm sure that at some point in time, somebody on that team, whether him or an assistant coach, is going to bring that streak up because it's been hell. It's been hell for Husky fans. And I've said on your show many, many, many times before, out of all the great things that have happened to Oregon football the last 20 years, the Rose Bowl against Penn State in 95, the pick by Kenny Wheaton in 95, the Heisman Trophy, the national title games, the billboard in Times Square, the uniforms, Phil Knight being your sugar daddy, all those things pale in comparison to the fact that Oregon has just owned Washington in the last 12 seasons. So there's no doubt that at some point in time that's going to come up. But I will say this as well, that look, whatever approach that Washington, whether Chris Peterson, Tyrone Willingham, Steve Sarkisian, Keith Gilbertson, whoever, whatever approach they've been taking isn't working, okay? So maybe it is time for someone to say, hey, what streak? I don't know what the hell you're talking about. What streak? This is just another football game, another Saturday on the road. It doesn't mean anything more than the Stanford game did or the Oregon State game will in 2 weeks or the Utah game will in 3 weeks. Maybe it's just time for a coach to take the different, maybe a different approach and see if that actually works on Saturday.
This streak started in 2004 in Eugene. Oregon beat Washington 31-6. In the last 12, has there been one that stands out to you as particularly painful?
You know what? It's funny that you bring that up. I would think last year was pretty painful because I thought the Huskies had a chance. Azeem Victor was out for that game. He got suspended for the first half because of a hit on Cody Kessler the week before versus USC. But they've all stunk. I mean, every single one of them has stunk. You know, going down there and losing there, having the Ducks come up here and beat the Huskies in Seattle, the crooked numbers. I mean, not only has Oregon won 12 games in a row, but they've covered the spread every year for 12 years in a row. So these games have gone exactly the way Vegas thought they were going to go, and I'm hoping the game goes exactly the way Vegas thinks it'll go on Saturday because the Huskies are 8.5-point favorites.
Not enough. That's not enough, Softy. You know that. Your eyeballs. What about Friday night with Stanford? What was that like to be in that stadium?
It was awesome. It was everything that we have been waiting for 15 years. And I got to tell you, look, I'll tell you, you know me, maybe I'm a little corny at times, but what the hell? I had tears in my eyes, literally, watching that first half of that football game against Stanford because Washington The 91 national championship team was being honored during that game on Friday, the 25th anniversary of the 91 title team. And they were playing like that. They were playing like the 91 title team. They were just rushing for every play. They had seven sacks in the first 35 plays of the game versus Stanford. Jake Browning was doing anything he wanted to do. Christian McCaffrey's Heisman Trophy campaign went up in friggin' flames on Friday night against Washington. He had, like, what, 79 total offensive yards, rushing and receiving, which is the fewest yards the guy's had on offense since he became a starter, for crying out loud. So that game kind of came out of nowhere, especially after the way they played against Arizona the week before, getting pushed to the limit and going to overtime. But I had tears in my eyes watching that football team play on Friday. We have not seen that kind of football literally from UW in the last 15, 16 years.
I know that there's some voice in the back of your head, and we're talking to Softy from KJR in Seattle. I know there's some voice in this back of your head that's going, please win this game. Please do not let this one be there, that insecurity that comes with 12 straight losses. But I don't see any way that the Huskies lose this game.
Well, there's a couple things that concern me. Number one, which quarterback is playing on Saturday, okay? I mean, obviously, Dakota Prutup right now looks like he's the guy. Will they flip the switch and go to Herbert if Prutup has a couple of bad series? Do they just say the hell with it and go to the backup and go to the freshman and let him play? I don't know a damn thing about the guy besides what I saw at the end of the game against Wazoo on Saturday. So there's the great unknown there. And then number two, look, I don't think this will be an issue because these guys have been drinking the Peterson Kool-Aid ever since he showed up here. But if they start getting all cocky and think about 44-6 over Stanford, and that they can just walk in there and walk right through this Oregon football team, despite how terrible and embarrassing their defense has been in the last 3 weeks, then there's a chance they could get beat, okay? Now, the extra day off, having played Friday, having the extra day off on Saturday, getting to watch the Ducks live on Saturday versus Washington State, that might be a big deal for them, coming off the emotional high of the Stanford game, having to turn around and go down there and play them in their house on Saturday. That might be a factor. But if they show up and play the kind of football they played Friday night versus Stanford, Oregon's got no shot. Oregon may as well cancel the game. It's going to be a bloodbath. People will get hurt. Children will cry. There's no point in playing this game for the Oregon Ducks if the Huskies play the way they play Friday. If they play the way they play Friday, John.
Don't you think it would be a mistake for Oregon to take Justin Herbert, a freshman, stick him into that environment against that defensive front that absolutely just bewildered Stanford? Wouldn't that be a mistake?
Well, I don't know. I don't know a damn thing about the kid. Again, all I saw is what I saw at the end of the game when the game was out of control against Washington State. So I have no idea about this kid's moxie. I have no idea what kind of talent he is. I have no idea mentally how prepared he'll be for the game on Saturday. I would think that playing at home would be a factor. I have no idea. If this game was in Seattle on the road at Husky Stadium, that doesn't make a lot of sense. But you would think the Ducks fans would at least come out and support their team on Saturday and give the guy a solid atmosphere to work behind. Look, you know, right now Dakota Prutup doesn't scare me a lot, okay? He doesn't. He looks like he's kind of getting figured out a little bit. He's not the runner I thought he was going to be. And if they can get into his head, stack the box, take away Royce Freeman. Look, and before you laugh at me for saying take away Royce Freeman, they took away Christian McCaffrey, okay? They took him away. He did literally nothing of relevancy in that game against the Dogs on Friday. If they can take away Christian McCaffrey, they can take away Royce Freeman. If they take away Royce Freeman and put the game in the hands of Dakota Prutup, I got a hard time thinking that guy can beat the Huskies.
I agree with you, and I think that defensive front is going to manhandle Oregon's offensive line. Four freshmen starting on the offensive line for the Ducks. Yeah. That's not pretty.
Well, it's not pretty, and again, going back to Friday night, they were getting home with four guys. They did not blitz once, did not send five players or more on one of those sacks they had Friday night versus Stanford. And then I think so many people, John, talk about the defense for UW. Look, I mean, Jake Browning right now has got 17 touchdowns, okay? He had 16 in 12 games a year ago. He's got 17 and 5. He's already tied for eighth on the all-time touchdown list at Washington. I'm salivating, absolutely salivating, thinking about Jake Browning and Miles Gaskin and LaVon Coleman and John Ross and Chico McClatcher and Darrell Daniels and Dante Pettis going against Brady Jokes defense on Saturday, okay? I realize that the players aren't there and that you hired Brady Joke to turn this thing around, but so far that defense to me looks worse than it did a year ago. And they were awful last year. I mean, what is it, 92 points and 1,200 yards in the last couple of games? Are you kidding me? What the hell happened to Oregon's defense? Because right now they have no defense.
You've been through coaching changes, and you've seen the Sark thing, and there was panic, like, Sark's leaving, what are we going to do? And now Chris Peterson gets hired, and that worked out. For Duck fans who are anxious about, hey, maybe we give Helfrich more time, because you look around and you see programs that they get stalled when they make a coaching change. Help those Duck fans out. Help them see the light.
Well, I would hope that, I mean, look, bottom line for me as a Husky fan, I want Mark Helfrich to stay. Because I don't think Mark Helfrich is even close to being in the class of a Chip Kelly or a Mike Bellotti or a Rich Brooks, okay? To me, he's not even close. And I feel, honestly, I feel bad saying that. I've met Mark a couple of times, as have you. I like him. He's a nice guy. He always treats me well. He's courteous. But he's not the answer for Oregon football whatsoever. And you don't have to look any further than the players that they've developed that have showed up at Oregon. These recruiting classes on paper are supposed to be outstanding. Are players getting better under him? Are they turning into the five-star blue-chip recruits they thought they were signing by the time they're juniors and seniors? I don't see that. And the fact that Oregon's giving up like 40 points a game going back to the middle of last year, the fact that you're 11-7 coming off the Ohio State loss in the national championship game, that's supposed to be a game that takes you guys to new heights, not sends you backwards, and that's what's happening. And I'll tell you what else. The fact that Chris Flippin' Peterson, and this is, again, coming from an Oregon perspective, from a Husky perspective, I love this. But if you're Chris Peterson, you've been on the job now for three recruiting classes, and 2.5 years in, you've got the number one rated player out of the state of Oregon, a defensive lineman named Marlon Tupelotu, coming to Washington, okay? You're going to start losing players to Washington. You're going to start losing players to other schools in the Pac-12. Mark Helfrich is not the answer, and he's never going to be the answer. And the sooner Oregon fans figure that out, the sooner you guys will be better off. I hope he stays there forever. Washington did the same thing when Don James left. They gave the job to Jim Lambright. Guy had a couple of decent years and then eventually became mediocre, and they fired him in 99, and they hired Rick Neuheisel, and 2 years later, the guy was in the flipping Rose Bowl. Mark Helfrich has not done anything of significance without Chip Kelly's players, and that's a fact.
We're talking to Dave Mahler, softy at KJR in Seattle. You're right. You're absolutely right. And it's the thing that gets me, and I said this earlier, and I feel like I'm being unfair to Mark Helfrich, but it's true. When he walks into the room, I feel like coordinator walking into the room.
Yeah. No, you don't sense it. I'm totally with you. He doesn't have that CEO mentality. I mean, look, Chris Peterson may be a little difficult sometimes with the media, may not be the most entertaining person with the press and all that stuff. But this is his show, all right? And there's no question about it. And nobody doubts the guy because of his record at Boise State and the fact that he's the only two-time Paul Bear Bryant Award winner when it comes to the Coach of the Year in college football. Whatever Chris Peterson wants to do, he can do. And I'll give you an example. This is the biggest week of the year in a lot of ways for Washington football. They're number 5. They have their highest ranking since the Rose Bowl in 2000 when Marcus Tuiasosopo beat Drew Brees in the Rose Bowl. And this week, he's not letting players talk to the media. He's shutting everything down. No Jake Browning, no Miles Gaskin, no Buda Baker, no Sidney Jones, no Saul Muching, who's the Walter Camp Defensive Player of the Week in college football. None of those guys will talk this week. You know what? And you know why? Because Chris Peterson doesn't want them to. And because Chris Peterson doesn't want them to, what does everybody say? Okay, good, fine, whatever. Whatever Coach Pete says.
Can you imagine if
this guy knows what he's doing?
Can you imagine if like Mike Leach did that? Everybody'd be freaking out. And
he'd be torched. He'd be torched.
Do you have a Huskies tattoo?
I do not. I don't have any tattoos. I'm Jewish, so I can't have any tattoos.
We're talking to Softy at KJR in Seattle. All right. You had tears in your eyes when they beat Stanford. You're going to be at this game? You're going to be at Autzen?
I will be there. Absolutely, I will be there.
Are you going to cry?
I might cry. I'm crying already thinking about this game on Saturday, man. You know what? And I saw you mention on Twitter that I can smile for the first time in 12 years. I smiled twice in the last 4 years, 5 years, 6 years. I smiled when Darren Thomas was picking his nose during the national title game against Auburn, and I smiled when Ohio State kicked their ass 2 years ago. That's when I smiled.
Softy.
I'm hoping to be smiling again Saturday night when UW sends Oregon to the grave.
There is an entitlement tax that I think the Ducks are paying because they've been good, because they've thrown it in people's faces. They've gone for two. They've run up the score. We're Nike and you're not. There's an entitlement tax they're paying. People, I think, are enjoying this downfall more than the average top five or top 10 program that's having some struggles, aren't they?
Well, let me just throw this out there and just see what you think about this, because when you bring that up, you're exactly right. This is not just Washington that's enjoying the downfall of Oregon. There's a lot of people across the country that are taking joy in watching what's happening to Oregon for, I think, a couple of reasons. Number one, I think exactly what you said. They come across as very arrogant and very entitled for a fan base and a program that up until the mid-90s did nothing. They sure act like they're Alabama or Michigan or Ohio State, and they have a rich football tradition that goes back 100 years. That's not the case. And then number two, the Oregon Ducks are sitting there at, what, 2-3? Is that right overall?
Yep.
2-3, John?
2-3.
Okay. They're 2-3, and I'm still looking at flipping ESPN, sending out Twitter alerts because of the uniforms that Oregon's going to wear for the game on Saturday. Who gives a damn? They're 2-3. They're a non-factor from a national perspective, and ESPN is sending out alerts telling us what the hell uniform combination Oregon's going to wear on Saturday. Why do I care? And why should anybody care about that? And what the hell is this Webfoot nonsense? Are you kidding me? How ridiculous is that? You know what? Get a kicker, kick an extra point, and wear the same damn jersey for every home game like every other stinking college football team does.
Softy, KJR, Seattle, I'll see you in the press box.
And the Ducks will head to their locker room, and the Huskies will head to theirs and feel good about themselves as well they should. They played extremely well tonight. They played like a potential Pac-12 champion. That's what they look like. And there's the final. Washington 70, Oregon 21.
You're listening to the best of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. Stay tuned for more. This is the BFT with John Canzano.
Hey, I appreciate everybody out there that makes the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show an important part of your day. As an audience member, you're important to me, and certainly the staff on this radio show, whether it's my producer Gliss or board operator Curtis Rogers, who happens to have two first names, or Dustin or Kylie or Adriana, who is in charge of the podcasting and does a terrific job as an associate producer on the show. I just want you to know that you're appreciated. You can reach out to us and tweet at me, at John Canzano BFT. I'm still waiting for you to help us with the bump music for the show. I feel like it's a real weakness in the show, and it's one of those things that I keep meaning to go through the vault and get rid of all the old fogey music and get some cooler music in there so that people think I'm cooler. But it's one of these things where it's a content-driven show, which is why these best of interviews do really well, and it's why people download the podcast. More than 400,000 people listen to interviews on the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show in the last 12 months. Think about that. 400,000. That's crazy. I appreciate everybody who's out there who's listening to the show and making it part of your day. But we spend a lot of time on the interviews of the show because we think they're terrific. And this week alone, you've heard from Dr. Jack Ramsey and Rick Majerus, who have both passed away. It's a chance to bring them back to life just a little bit so people can hear their voices and hear their words. And I hope you enjoyed that stuff. And other athletes like Jim Barnett, former Trailblazer, who was just terrific, and Brian Grant, who's was amazing talking about the Blazers, and Damon Stoudemire. And if you missed any of the best of shows, you can grab those podcasts by subscribing to the show on SoundCloud and iTunes. Before I jump into this interview that I promised you, I also want to call your attention to the fact that you're happening to be listening to this BFT radio show on your favorite station, whether that's in Portland on 102.9 and 750 The Game, or in Eugene on Fox Sports Eugene 95.7 FM and 1050 AM, or Klamath Falls, soon to be the third member of the BFT radio network. I appreciate that you have reached out and made a commitment to us. And if you haven't yet, you can reach out right now if you're driving in your car. You can reach out to the dial. You can push that button and make us your number one preset. I've normally not asked you to make us number one, but I feel like we have extended the commitment to you of trying to put together not just a local radio show, but we're a local show in that we will deal with things that have to do with the things you love and you care about, but we book it like a national show. And it's why you heard Danny Glover on the show earlier this week. And it's why President Obama made an appearance on the show and Mike Tyson and others. We try to book it like a national show, and Gliss goes out as the producer of the show, and he chases rainbows. And a lot of times he comes back empty handed, but other times he comes back and he has a big get, and you're the beneficiary of that. So offer a little bit back is what I'm saying. Reach out right now. Touch that number one on your dial and just hold it down until it beeps. That's how you do the preset. If you didn't know that, then now you've learned. But in your car, I would like to see this radio station that you're listening to as your number one preset. That's just, you know, it's a give and take, the relationship that we're in. All right. Now, I promised you Brian Urlacher. He did an interview with us in 2016. Where he had grown hair. Remember Urlacher? Bald-headed. Good bald head. Good-looking guy. Great linebacker. He went and grew hair. And you have to figure that a woman was involved in this, right? Well, Brian Urlacher joined us on the radio show to talk about how a Chicago Bears linebacker suddenly sprouted hair.
You're listening to the best of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show.
I was very disappointed to see hair on Brian Urlacher's head. The name of the show is The Bald-Faced Truth. For bald men everywhere... I think it was a sad day, Brian Urlacher. How are you, sir?
I'm good, man. How are you?
There has to be a woman involved in this.
It was my decision, you know. it was my decision in the end. No woman involved. All me. Conferred with my kids. They were okay with it. And it made it happen.
You had a good-looking bald head.
I still got a good-looking bald head. You know, I can still shave. I got no scars. I got nothing that it's... Except a nice full head of hair that would prevent me from shaving it.
Are you getting a lot of text messages from friends and teammates?
Oh, my gosh. My ex-teammates are having a good time with this. I'll tell you what. I've got more pictures and funny stuff in the last 2 days than I care to admit. It's pretty funny.
Who in particular is giving you the hardest time?
Anthony Adams, one of my old teammates. Yeah. Lance Briggs has been pretty good as well.
Yeah. That's good.
It's been fun, but there's been also some other people. You know, that Jake Glazer is a good friend of mine who's been pretty funny as well on his Twitter account.
It's funny. I was looking at your Twitter feed, and a couple things jumped out at me. I mean, you've got a good sense of humor, and you're having fun with this. I also noticed that all over the Twitter feed, you've got photographs of yourself helping kids out, doing work with young people. I think it's pretty impressive. The you know, the percentage, like, you're not tweeting out photographs of your cereal. You know, you're out working with kids. You can tell you're making wishes come true. Why is that important to you?
It's fun. I have a good time doing stuff like that. You know, I think it's important if you're in a position that I've been lucky enough to be in throughout my career. I think it's important to do stuff like that. You know, the more I enjoy it, and it's nice to be able to do stuff like that.
Brian Urlacher is our guest, former linebacker, 13 years with the Chicago Bears. Do you miss it?
Football, no. I don't miss football. You know, I'm a huge fan of football. Now I can watch games on Sundays and not have to worry about, you know, making mistakes. I can watch games as a fan and enjoy them. Still have never been to an NFL football game that I haven't played in. So I'm sure that'll end one of these days. But I'm a huge fan. Love college football. Love NFL football. Just love being around the game.
Would it be hard for you to just watch? Is that why you don't go? Or were you at the stadium enough as a working?
No, I like watching football. Even when I played, I loved watching football. But it was just hard because I was always playing on Sundays.
Yeah.
So I was always watching college on Thursday or NFL Thursday and then college on Saturday. But I just, you know, I don't miss the game. I don't miss – I mean, I miss my teammates. I said that from day one. I miss being around the guys, but I don't miss the game as well. And the further I get away from it, the further removed I am, the less I miss it.
Brian Urlacher, our guest, 8-time Pro Bowler. In your book, The Middle School Rules of Brian Urlacher, you write that you were 5'8", 125 in middle school. Is that true?
That might be a stretch on my height. That wasn't very big. When I got to high school, I shot up. I think I was 5'11 or 5'10 my sophomore year. I graduated 6'4". I was skinny, wow. Though. But I put on weight when I got to college, so I wasn't like... I was never in that really awkward stage, but I was able to gain weight when I got to college pretty easily and pretty quick.
I look at kids that develop that way or shoot up. And Chris Paul was on earlier. He played JV basketball in high school, and you know he didn't make the varsity team.
Was that a benefit to you? Did that make you work harder? Did you have to learn to play differently because of the physical changes?
No, I mean, I always felt like I worked pretty hard. I was very fortunate when I was coming up that I had my parents cared what I was doing, and I also had a bunch of high school coaches and junior high coaches that cared what I was doing as well. So I was pretty much guided in the right direction in that aspect. But, man, I always felt like I busted my butt. I always felt like I had a chip on my shoulder, especially being from a small town.
Yeah.
I just think most of the guys from small towns are kind of have that chip on their shoulder.
Ryan Urlacher, former NFL linebacker, our guest. We saw at the beginning of the year a couple guys like Chris Borland retiring. It surprised a lot of people. What do you think when you see stuff like that?
You know, it's a life choice that guys are going to make now. You know, that's the way the game's gone now with the concussions and the way that people made people aware of it. It's a decision he made for himself and his family. Don't fault him. You know, that's what he wanted to do. I personally wouldn't do it. I love football, man. I realize there's concerns that come with playing football, and I'm going to take those risks, I guess, when you strap on the pads every day.
Do you ever feel, I mean, as we learned more about brain injuries, did you approach practice different or anything, or did you just say, this is how I have to play?
No, I mean, practice was never, you know, training camp, you can hit a little bit, you know, in preseason games, but during season, you don't really hit that much. You know, people think we're out there banging heads every day. We're not doing that every day, you know. We're allowed to. The players now are allowed to have one padded practice a week. So if they're banging heads every day, there are going to be some collisions, and sometimes they can be avoided, sometimes they can't. But I never thought about it when I played. You know, I think if you start thinking about it, that's when you start missing tackles. That's when guys get hurt, when you start trying to protect yourself, I think.
Seahawks are going to Minnesota in a game where it will be crazy cold, played outdoors. Yeah. What do you think of that game outdoors?
The Seahawks are playing great right now. That's what I think. You know, outdoors, whatever. It's the same for both teams. I mean, people always say, oh, man, they got the home field advantage. It's cold. It's cold for both teams. It's not like one team has a better advantage because it's warmer for them. It's going to be cold on both sidelines. You know, maybe the Vikings will be more prepared for it because they can practice outside in it. But, I mean, once the ball's kicked off, then that really matters.
Do you like playing in the cold?
I did. I loved it, man. I don't like it now. I don't like living in it because it's cold. But I dang sure like playing in it when Sundays were fun here in Chicago when we got to winter football. It was a blast. Our fans go crazy, so it makes it more fun.
The AFC feels like it's a little bit up in the air, and you know, you watch it. You see Peyton Manning coming back. You see Brady, who, you know, he'll get his guys back, but will they be able to find rhythm? Who do you like in the AFC?
I like the two wild card teams, actually. I like Pittsburgh, and I like Kansas City. Denver, you know, with if Peyton's back in Denver, that changes their team for me as well. I like them a little more than I did before. You saw what he did Sunday when he came back in. It was fun to see him do that. But I like those wild card games. I think they're hot. You know, Kansas City's won 9-10 games in a row now. They're playing well. So, and Pittsburgh, obviously, had to win their last game to get in. But so that was a playoff game for them pretty much.
Did you check out the Alamo Bowl, Oregon and TCU?
Yes, I did. I had Oregon, dang it.
Yeah, he joined
first half was great. I was pumped. I don't know. You know, Gary Patterson, the coach at TCU, was my defensive coordinator my first 2 years in college. So I always pull for him just because I like him. He's a good guy. But I thought Oregon would win, especially with the quarterback being out for TCU.
What in the second half of that game, Oregon's having trouble snapping the ball. It's clear that the backup quarterback's over his head. So what should have Oregon done there? What could they have done to shorten that game up and get out of there?
You know, it's easy for me to say as a fan, as a person watching on TV, you know, you say run the ball more. You they could have played better defense. They could have stopped them.
Yeah.
You know, as a defensive guy, that's always where I'm going to go. And then you say, well, run the ball. You know, Freeman's a good running back. Man, he's a good running back. But sometimes stuff just happens. Sometimes things bounce the other team's direction. It's like in the first half for Oregon, they went every bounce with TCU's way the second half. And those guys made plays, and Oregon's defense looked tired into the game. You know, I watched the whole game. They looked pretty tired into the game for good reason.
Alabama, Clemson, who do you like?
Oof, I like Bama. They're two good football teams, but it's just so hard for me to go against Alabama in these big games. They've been there every year. They're there. They always show up. Last year they got their butts kicked. But other than that, they pretty much show up every game. So it's hard for me to go against them.
Ryan Urlacher is our guest, former Bears linebacker, 8-time Pro Bowler. You're into fishing. You're writing books for middle school kids. You're playing golf and helping kids that have terminal illness. You're growing hair. You're watching football. You're a dad and a husband. You've got range, man.
You know, I got a lot of stuff going on right now. I've been pretty busy trying to fill my time away from football. You know, sorry about the beeping. My seatbelt was taken off for a second. just trying to fill my time. You know, fishing and my kids and golf keep me pretty busy.
Did you see that the Redskins are having a contest to see who can drive the crappiest car to work? And they're all driving beat up old cars.
I didn't see that. That's pretty funny, though. This is the players doing that?
Yeah. Kirk Cousins is driving a GMC van that's got a dent in the side of it. And what's the crappiest car Brian Urlacher ever drove?
Oh, man, my first vehicle, I had a 1978 Chevy Love pickup. I was a sophomore in high school. It cost $800. But that sucker got me from school and back to practice. That's really all that mattered to me.
Different times now. What are you driving today?
Today I'm driving my Range Rover. Yeah. I love this car.
A little different than that pickup.
A little different, yeah. A little step up, I guess.
All right, so you're growing the hair. How did you grow the hair? How did this happen?
Yeah, so a buddy of mine went to this place. It's called Restore Hair. And he went to this place and got the hair procedure done. And he was like, so I was bald and I just shaved my head. You know, I wasn't trying to hold on to my hair. This dude was bald but trying to hold on to his hair. So it didn't look that good. And after a guy's procedure, I looked pretty damn good. I was like, wow, you look good, dude. So he goes, you should try it. So I tried it. And the good thing about it is, so say I got it done and I didn't like my hair. I could still, there's no scars on my head. I can still shave my head bald. There's no scars involved. It's just, it's a procedure they do. They take one hair at a time out of the back of my head where I have hair and put it where I don't have hair. So it's a pretty simple process. If you just explain it like that, there's a lot more to it, obviously. But that's what happened. You know, and the hair grew 6 to 8 months later. I had a full head of hair.
All right. So when you walk into a room now, do you feel like you have to explain it? Or do people bring it up the first time? Or is this you getting out in front of it by just saying, look, I'm going public. I'm going to talk about it so it doesn't have to be awkward?
I'm a hat guy for the most part. So I wear a hat pretty much all the time. So wasn't an issue until I came out with it on, was it Tuesday?
Yeah.
Yesterday, I guess, was the release of the hair. So that's when, so I got to get out in front of it. But like you said, it's been funny. Good responses. Some funny stuff out there. Doesn't bother me. My kids are okay with it, so I'm all right with it.
8-time Pro Bowler with us. All right, so you've got the hair thing going on. What sells for you? When you watch football, is there a broadcaster or analyst in particular who you think really gets it?
Troy Aikman's always been one of my favorites. You know, he doesn't really talk about himself very much when he's doing these games. He talks about the game and situations. Moose Johnson, another, when they're with him and Troy together, I really enjoy this. And Joe Buck does a good job as well. Jim Nance to me and Phil Simms are great. You know, there's so many good ones out there, I feel like, because, you know, he's changed channels every day now. I watch all, every game. There's so many crews. But those guys really get it to me, in my opinion. Oh, John Gruden, what am I talking about? Gruden's the man. My guys are great because of John Gruden.
What is it that Gruden does that you connect with?
I don't even know what it is. He's just funny. The stuff he says, the fish he makes, his Gruden grinder.
Yeah.
It's just funny. He makes it, you know, because they don't have great games on Monday night late in the season. You know, they got some crappy teams sometimes. They can't flex that schedule. So they don't get the greatest games, but I watch anyway because Gruden's calling the game.
Do you think
it was awesome as well? They complement each other really well.
Jobs open up, and all of a sudden, everybody goes, "Hey, Gruden should be a candidate." I think he has a better job right now.
Oh, if I was him, I would never leave the booth. He works 17 days a year, pretty much 5 days off a week. I mean, what? And I'm sure he's making a decent amount of money. So why? What could be better than that? No film, no sitting in meetings for 50 hours a week. I mean, he's got a pretty good gig.
Chip Kelly, a lot of people in this part of the country interested in where he lands. Where do you think he went wrong in Philly?
I don't know that he went wrong. I just think that, you know, players are important in the NFL. They mean a lot to your team. There's not a system or anything that can survive without good players. You know, I don't know if he thought that his system could just flip anyone in there and be successful. You know, he trades LeSean McCoy, gets rid of DeSean Jackson, and those are two pretty damn good players in the NFL, in my opinion. So it's going to be hard to make up for those guys I'm not sure if it's what his thinking process is, but as some people say, he thinks the system can hold anybody in it. And I think we find out this year that's really not the case.
The jobs that are open, like the New York Giants, the 49ers, the Browns, the Dolphins, the Eagles. Is there one job in particular you think's a good job?
I think the Eagles is going to be a good job. I think they have a lot of talent on that football team. The Giants, Eli, I mean, you got an established quarterback right there with Eli. You walk into a good situation there. I thought the Dolphins came on late in the season, but with Coach Campbell, I thought they played a lot better. I can't remember who else. But, yeah, there's some good jobs out there, I believe, and teams that could get it right there on the cusp of being pretty good.
All right, Brian Urlacher, I don't like that you're growing hair because I'm a bald guy, but
I get it.
I accept you. You're a good man and obviously a great football player. But thanks for making time for us, and we'd love to have you back anytime.
Thanks. I appreciate you, man. Take care.
So there you have it. That's how a guy grows hair. And maybe one day I'll sprout a full head of hair and we can have a conversation about it. I really appreciate you. I appreciate everybody who makes this radio station and this show in particular part of your day. There's a reason you're an army out there, and our advertisers know it, and the listeners know it. And look, we're not always going to agree. We don't. But what we do is we have a discussion about things. We exchange ideas. Maybe you call into the show, or maybe I just tell you what I think, and you slam your fist against the dashboard, or maybe you laugh with us a little bit. But the important thing is that we're engaging here a little bit, and you're thinking about things, and I'm thinking about things as well. Obviously, a big, big baseball game for Oregon State today in front of them. The Beavers are in Omaha getting after it, and we'll deal with that on Monday on the show. And what's next for the Trailblazers as they move towards the heart of free agency? All of that will be part of the discussion, a big discussion on Monday's radio show. I will be back in the seat on Monday. Best of, we'll take a break from that, and we will download. I want your phone calls right out of the gate on the show on Monday. So appreciate you, as I always say, and I want you to have a great weekend, and thank you for making us part of your day, and for dedicating a portion of your disposable energy, as I put it, to digesting this radio show and participating in it. And I always say it's three-dimensional. It's not a two-dimensional thing. It's a three-dimensional thing. So I appreciate you being part of that. I want you to leave it here. Great programming on this station, as always. And there's a reason why you've got it locked in here. And I said make that commitment earlier. I hope you reached out and you pushed the number one dial and make this radio station number one on your dial. You should. We go way out of our way to try to give you great content. All I'm asking for is a finger back on that dial. Push number one and make us number one on your presets. Tweet at me, at John Canzano BFT, and remember that the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show is not here for a long time, just a good time.
Thank you for listening to the best of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show.